Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast.
My name is Brayden, and I'm joined here today by Alex.
Hey, guys, and I'm joined here by Corey as well.
Hey, guys, how are you?
And we are joined by Tammy Buller. Now, Tammy has written The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly Paramedic, and she is joined with us today to give us an insight into attitude and reflection and all these different aspects of the job that don't necessarily get taught about at university. She's releasing a new book, and that'll be coming out next week as of the time we're recording this, and we'll have a chat a bit about that book as well. So, Tammy, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, guys. Thanks very much for having me. My name's Tammy Bullard. I live in Western Australia, and I'm a registered paramedic and writer and author and educator.
Very nice. So, our first question off the rank for you is, what drove you to write The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly Paramedic?
It's probably one of the most often asked questions, and it's good. I'm beginning to formulate my answer as I go along because I was always kind of vague on how it came about. But I did an interview the other day, and I think I finally narrowed it down. And the catalyst for it was a list for new students that I was teaching and precepting on road and at uni at the same time. So I came up with a list of things to make their life easier when they start on road. That's not a new thing. That's just something that I've copied from other people. I was handed something similar, just a couple of sheets of printed information. But I put together quite a complex list with lots of attitude-based things in it, and started delivering that to students as I was teaching. And then on talking to other people, everybody had an opinion about what they would like to see included in the list. So I gradually just compiled a bigger list of a combination of hundreds or potentially a thousand or a couple of thousand of people's ideas of what they think makes good and what they think makes ugly and what they think makes the bad in the middle. And then from there came up with the sliding scale approach, like our pain scale. So it was, you can check yourself on a daily basis where you fall on the scale of good to bad to ugly. And that's where the book came from there.
That's a really good insight to how you like want to change that, like make that book and make a difference in the paramedicine, like patient care and professionalism. You mentioned in your book that it took you 4 years to write it. So has your plan or the vision for that book changed in the duration it took you to write?
Yeah, absolutely. It took 4 years to write, partly because of study and teaching commitments and family commitments, but also because I was chewing it over in my head a lot. It never started off as something structured, like I want to write a book and then here's the format, because it just gradually, it was a passion project of something I was just going to hand to people because I was passionate about the subject of best patient care and our perception of paramedic professionalism from the general public. So it was a passion project. That's why it took 4 years. And when I finally finished some formation of the book and decided to actually publish it, instead of just hand it out as a printed set of sheets of paper, the whole premise of the thing was just completely fresh. I had no idea, completely blank mind about where it was going to go from there. So basically, I put together the book, released it in the way that I felt it was how I wanted it to be delivered, how I wanted the message to come across. And really, in all honesty, I had no vision at that point for where the book would go. Fast forward 2 years since the release of the first book, and it's been really interesting. It was more based around something that I would publish, and I kind of saw it as more of a something on Australian shores that people would read, and maybe it would just help people to form their own ideas instead of just copying what they see. But it's actually exploded into something that is surprisingly heavy uptake in the US, in Canada, in the UK, New Zealand, and other countries, and particularly Germany for some reason. It's been really interesting where it's gone from there. And now I get to do nice things that I enjoy, like writing for EMS One, EMS World, Australian Emergency Services Magazine, places like that, where the continuation of the passion project gets to filter all the way through. I'm really enjoying it. It's been great. It's definitely, I had no idea what I did expect, but I did not expect what we're currently working with now.
It's refreshing to hear such a humble vision for your book come to life into such a successful, even international success. I had a question in relation to your blog post about how great expectations in paramedicine may set you up for failure. And you talk specifically about aiming for success with a realistic approach. For our listeners and students currently in or thinking about completing the paramedicine degree, what do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions that you had about paramedics prior to heading into your employment?
That is a very good question. Wow. So I think one of the biggest misperceptions that I had, and I think a lot of people have, is the type of work that we're going to see on a regular basis. I was pleasantly surprised by the broad range of work that we see, but certainly it didn't meet my expectation. I'd never been a big fan of watching TV shows or reality things, or and social media wasn't a big deal back then either, but I had this perception of us doing life-saving things every day, probably 4 or 5 or 6 recesses a day, and you know, lots of motor vehicle collisions, all sorts of things. To find out that it wasn't a big shock to me, in all honesty, because the reality is nobody can live in a place where these things are happening so many times a day that every crew gets dispatched to 4 or 5 recesses a day, thankfully, because that would be a hellish place to live if that was the case. The perception that other people have, I know from people that I teach and people that I work with, their perception has been really similar. And some people are disappointed. And I think that's where that blog post comes from, setting yourself up for success so that you do have a realistic expectation of what you're going to be walking into. Because if somebody's hoping it's going to be lights and sirens and mad excitement and movie type quality work for the whole duration of every shift, one, it's not realistic, two, it's not going to happen, and three, burnout would happen in the course of about 2 months and you'd be done. So that's the great expectations concept comes from being realistic, not getting too caught up in social media, reality TV, and how things look in the real world.
First thing that caught my attention was familiarity breeds contempt. I guess that's why it's really important to have a really good attitude towards things. What types of things did you see that were lacking in attitude and doing all of these things that made you think that people were being contempt in the job?
I think the familiarity breeding contempt issue seems to come up a lot, especially on social media nowadays. I wrote an article recently about social media, about memes. I really enjoy jokes. I enjoy having fun. But I do think that there is a time and a place for that. And familiarity breeds contempt amongst our social media networks, particularly. We have some that have in excess of 1 million followers, and then we have others that have less than, I suppose, 1,000 or a couple of thousand followers. The smaller numbers tend to be more educational. And then we have the ones that are full of memes and possibly inappropriate stories about cases that people have attended. They have a really large following. And for new people, they're familiar with the job before they've even stepped inside an ambulance for the very first time. So when I started, you had this reverence for ambulance and for the whole world of paramedicine, and couldn't wait to get in the ambulance, do the right thing, want to be seen to be super keen and really excited to be there. Now we have this marinating in a sea of memes, of people talking about cases on a daily basis, derogatory terms for patient, so that by the time somebody who's been interested in ambulance for 2 or 3 years, in the lead up to their first shift or first observer shift or ride along in any ambulance, they have already experienced that familiarity, the dark humor, the memes, the discontent. So they're so familiar with what they see as they're so familiar with the feeling of contempt for ambulance and sometimes, unfortunately, for patients, mistakenly, that kind of familiarity becomes dangerous. The other concept that it talks about in the book is how we become so familiar in our ambulance, which is our office effectively, or when we're in a hospital corridor, if we go to the same hospital and we're ramped for 4, 5, 6 hours at a time on every shift in the same hospital, we get really familiar with the surroundings. We're naturally hardwired as humans to seek comfort. Therefore, we try and get comfortable in those surroundings that we become familiar with. But what we find easy to forget, as does everybody, not just paramedics, is that the patients that we are accompanying that are with us in that corridor or in that ambulance or in a different setting that we're all in together, those people are not familiar with the surroundings, not familiar with the situation, and also not familiar with the terminology that may be used. So in that area, familiarity can breed contempt and really negatively affect public perception of us as paramedics and as each individual as a registered paramedic.
That's such a sad reality, but such an amazing point that you've just brought up about that. There's this really good study I like. It's done by the New York Times, where they take 10,000 first-year intakes from a Army training academy, and they basically ask them, what's your goals for your career? And then they come back 10 years later and see where they are in their career. And those that had those extrinsic goals of saying, like, I want to become a CCP, 9 times out of 10, they weren't in the job anymore because they put so much pressure on themselves from such a small time that then now that they're out. But then those that had like those intrinsic goals and they basically said, I just want to become like the best paramedic that I can possibly be, they're still in the jobs, they're in those higher up positions, and they're in those better attitudes towards the job and better feelings. And I think that way there, kind of expecting yourself to be better rather than expecting the job to be better, I think that's a really important factor. Now, you mentioned in the book that it's like how it's such a highly competitive profession, and therefore you're kind of forced right from the beginning to find ways that give us an edge. As a student, what can we, like from your reflection, what could we do to, you know, give us an edge of patient care?
Great question. I enjoyed writing that bit in the book where it talks about what does give us the edge, because it's such a competitive industry to get into and in such a competitive industry to progress within. So me personally, anybody that's listening to this is perfectly entitled to disagree, and I may have forgotten something that's really important. But for me, as a current practicing paramedic and as an educator, and I do other things, I do peer reviews of research articles, things like that. When I'm looking at the broad spectrum of paramedicine, I personally feel that something that gives a great edge for any student is humility and honesty with themselves and others. If I'm assessing somebody, and again, so this is from my point of view, not broadly speaking, if I'm assessing somebody, I don't expect them to be perfect, because assessments or CIMEXs or OSCEs, whatever it is that you do in whichever ambulance state or service you're working in, there's no expectation of perfection. What I'm looking at is if that person is going to care for my family. I have 2 adult children, and if I think of those in any emergency situation, I'm picturing that person caring for my people. And if they can be humble in what they're doing and not try to prove a point, not try to use humor to distract my attention, because that's not going to work either. If they're not trying to look like some superhero that's slick, that's of no interest to me. What I'm interested in is, can they connect with that patient, be it a mannequin or a real human, makes no difference. We have to connect with the person that we're striking up rapport with, if they can connect, if they can make good decisions, and if they can be honest. So instead of, if you go, say you go from a D to A to E assessment in an examination or an assessment, and you forget something along the way, I have seen people pretend that it didn't happen and hope that I've missed it. I haven't missed it because there's a tick box in front of me, as with most assessors, there's certain areas that need to be fulfilled. It's okay to go, I remember I need to go back to check a BGL at D. That's okay. It also has the added edge. This is the edge that I love and what I look for most in students that are going to be really great paramedics, that they're able to humbly be honest and admit that they don't know everything, that they can't know everything, and that they're really keen to learn, and that patient care matters more to them than how they appear to either the assessor or to the general public around them. For me personally, that's the edge that somebody can bring to any assessment, and then also ultimately to their patient care.
That's awesome. I think it's so refreshing to hear from an actual paramedic that you're not striving for perfection from your students. You're just striving for honesty. And I think that's awesome. And I think it leads into my next question I had about one of your blog posts, and it's titled, If Paramedics Had the Ego of Ants. And I love that the title that you've put that for. And I love how you talk about how we need an ego because it's vital to be confident in our patient care, but it can also become an issue when it prevents us from listening to suggestions of better and safer ways to do things. So as paramedics, we know it's vital to have an ego and to be confident in our practice, but it's also vital to have a teachable attitude to avoid complacency. What would be some tips or habits that students can implement to hit the correct balance of ego to teachability on their placements?
Well, great question. The question of ego comes up so often in our job and in our industry, and it's such a fine balance between the two. Whenever I write something about ego, it also brings up some really interesting discussion from both sides of the fence. So I think for students in their placements, balancing that ego can be as easy as literally picturing yourself being in a seat. If there's two seats in an ambulance, are we in the ego seat or the patient care seat? The patient care seat is a slightly more uncomfortable seat to try and relax into, because there's never going to be a point that you can just put everything behind you and tick the box and say, yeah, I've got this. That's not going to happen, because we're always going to be looking for something else to be done, something that we can question ourselves on, that we can maybe fine tune. The ego seat can be a really comfortable place for lots of people to sit, because by sitting there and not thinking so much about the patient, it's easy to just cruise on by and leave the things behind. No need to second guess anything that we do, no need to fine tune anything, no need to be concerned or spend any time thinking about things that we could perhaps improve on. So as simple as picturing yourself in a seat and that seat driving towards your own family members. Which seat would you like me to be in when I turn up to your family members? And which seat would I like you to be in when you turn up to mine? I think that simplifies it, and I've only worked that out over several years of teaching and how to help people find a really easy way to just check themselves, particularly when they're working with somebody where they feel more vulnerable or slightly ridiculed perhaps, or somebody that's waiting for opportunities to laugh at them and feel silly. That's the dangerous point that we can all get to when we want to sit in the ego seat to protect ourselves, protect our ego. But even still, it's worth the discomfort to slide back into the patient care seat and work from there.
That's really, really nice, actually, the way to put it, because it's a simple way, I guess, to check yourself and go, am I doing the right thing? That ties in nicely with one of the chapters in your book, Beware the Bluff, But Wear It Well. And so you give this, this too much of an ego, this thought that I have to be good at everything, I have to know everything type of attitude, I guess. You call it the bluff. How can students start to recognize what the bluff is in themselves and how to start recognizing when they should take it off?
Okay. The bluff has been an interesting concept for lots of people, particularly police, other first responders and nurses. It's something that we all have to do. I've explained in various interviews that if I turn up today in my white t-shirt and my warm cardigan, if I turn up like this in my personal vehicle, in my normal everyday clothes, I cannot make myself go into several of the jobs that I would go in uniform. So the uniform itself gives us that slight edge of being able to manage a scene or have the confidence to walk in. If we put all of us, all paramedics, in uniform, we also need to have an edge that we can bring to perhaps more stressful jobs or more stressful situations. So the bluff is something that, as you say, described in the book, it's like a cloak. We don this cloak and then we can walk in. It's particularly useful for things like turning up on a really confronting scene. Doesn't matter how much we read or prepare for some of the things that we see. Turning up with the sights, sounds and smells of that scene are almost impossible to deal with in the moment, yet the people there expect us to make a very quick decision about what needs to happen and to give direction. In order for us as normal everyday humans to be able to step in, deal with something that we find confronting and then get past that hurdle, we need that little extra edge, and that's when we pop on our bluff cloak, tie it on, gives us a chance to just take a breath, broaden our shoulders ever so slightly and be more prepared to deal with the confrontation that we're dealing with. Other aspects can be literally walking into a scary house. You might be walking in with a partner, both of you are frightened, but one of you needs to be able to don the bluff and say, okay, this is what's going to happen, so that we can bring a bit of order to potential chaos that's happening. And then also amongst our colleagues, this is where it becomes more dangerous if we don't take it off, amongst our colleagues and our families. Patients look to us for answers. We generally can give them some kind of answer. If we wear the bluff too often, we become so comfortable with the feeling of always being able to bluff an answer that we forget or we avoid the vulnerability involved in not wearing that bluff cloak and being able to say, hey, I don't know, or being able to say, I'm not sure, should we look it up together? So the danger of not taking off that bluff cloak means that we can forget to be ourselves, people can't get to know us anymore, and that can extend as far as to our families, where we come home, and I've spoken to several paramedics about this that have been in the job for decades that really enjoyed that chapter, because they've described different things like perhaps marriage breakdowns or breakdowns in friendships or a disconnect with their children, where they become so used to being in control, in bluffing their way along so that they feel comfortable and confident in what they're doing, that the thing they forget is to be the person on the couch that's able to let down their guard, take off that bluff cloak and show that vulnerability to the people that care for them most. In terms of students using it, again, picturing it seems to work. The reason that in this book and in other books that I've written or I'm writing, I've tried to come up with visual concepts is that it takes the pressure of the sense of self out of the concept. It's very difficult to, when we're under pressure, to say, hey, you're being silly, stop doing this, or recognizing something that we're doing. If we can picture these things as an actual visual concept, i.e. walk into a job, take that bluff cloak from out of behind the seat in the ambulance, pop it on, wear it, but then actively take it off when you get back into the ambulance, so that you're able to have a proper debrief with your crewmate, so that you're able to have a decent conversation with the support or well-being people in your organization, so that you're able to get yourself back to who you are and not get caught up in the bluff as you go.
That's a really good point, and it definitely was one of my most favorite chapters of your book. How important is that public perception is trying to uphold it?
Oh, so important, especially this year. I've done a lot of work with different ambulance services or organizations in the US in this last 6 months or so with pandemia. It's been amazing how public perception, one of the big complaints of a lot of paramedics is not enjoying being called an ambulance driver. So our public perception is we may want to be called professional paramedics, therefore, it's really important that we behave as professional paramedics at all times when we're in uniform so that public perception doesn't dip. Currently in Australia, we're really fortunate to be a trusted profession, although our numbers are dropping. I think first, don't quote me on this, 7 or 8 years in a row, we were voted the most trusted profession in Australia in, I think it was the Reader's Digest surveys. But we're gradually dropping in the charts ever so slightly in favour of other professions. However, we are still up there on the list of highly respected professions in our country. It's not going to take many issues for that to change, as we've seen with other organisations in different parts of the world. You can be in favour 1 minute and then you can be completely out of favour the next minute. And there's a chapter about public perception means everything. The things that we do in front of the public are second nature to us because, as we talked about earlier, we've become familiar with our surroundings. The public, however, are not so familiar with us being there. So their perception of our everyday moves is interesting. One of the things that attracted to us to paramedicine, no doubt that we saw ambulances around or we saw paramedics or we saw something on TV. But unlike most jobs, something out in the public eye attracted us to this. We noticed it somewhere. The fact that we noticed this profession and wanted to be involved, it's very important that we remember that other people are noticing our profession and they may not want to be involved, but they do want to be cared for by us. Therefore, they need to have trust in what we do. And one of the concepts in the book is the general public are very good at looking after paramedics. We're out there in single responders, maybe usually as teams of two, sometimes there may be three of us at best, but very often we're out with no security, with no nowhere to run to, nowhere to hide. We're in a really exposed situation. Thankfully for us, the general public currently love paramedics and all things ambulance. Therefore, we're relatively safe and we can expect that they'll look out for us when things do start to happen. How we behave now to uphold that respect and that positive public perception certainly shapes our safety and how well we are perceived in the future. And that extends to, as talked about in the book, public perception on the ramp. If a patient is listening to our conversation for 2, 3, 4 hours at a time, what are we talking about? Who are we talking about? Does it involve patient care? How we're perceived by doctors and nurses and allied health professions and police and fireys that we work with, how we're perceived by our everyday general public as we're walking along, how we converse in coffee shops, the topics that we discuss, and whether we're eliciting trust in them or whether we're making them disappointed in our behaviour. Public perception factors into everything we do. The entire time that our career is based in the general public's eye, then public perception is key in everything that we do.
That's awesome. Such a great response. Moving on from the public perception, I just wanted to ask a question about personal relationships within the workforce or within other health professionals. I think it's inevitable that we will come across conflict across our career. And I just wanted to ask about how you deal with that, how you deal with conflict between health professionals or just between individuals in general.
Yeah, that's a great question because it's always going to come up. It comes up in our personal lives and we can walk away from it. We can choose to not be friends with somebody anymore and not play in a different sports team. We can choose to walk away. When it's in our professional lives, we are paid to be in that role and continuation of care, dealing with the same people in the same hospitals or the same colleagues in the same service. So it's inevitable, as you say, that it's going to come up. I have always hated confrontation. It's something that I've always been really terrible at. When I started this job, I realized that it's something that's going to be unavoidable. And I had to work really hard at finding a way to deal with it. So again, had to create a picture. I'm clearly a very visual person. I had to create a picture in my head of what the confrontation looked like. I would rather deal with a confrontation when it's tiny because it's just happened and it hasn't grown legs and or turned into a snowball effect, rather than let it get bigger and bigger until it becomes a big lump under the carpet that you can't ignore and you keep tripping over. So in the writing that I do and in that book, it talks about dealing with confrontation in an understanding way. And it's happened often at work. It happens probably every couple of weeks at work. There may be a misunderstanding at the hospital. There may be a crossover of patient care in a handover. Something may come up. It's so much easier. And putting it into practice with my own paramedic career, I find it so much easier to say, hey, can we have a chat about that for a second? And take that person away from everybody else so that it's not a public issue. And then just have a chat. Hey, what happened there? And 9 times out of 10, that will be completely non-confrontational. It de-escalates all by itself, just having the conversation. And from then on, interactions with that person generally, even some of the ones that have surprised me and I didn't expect it to go well, generally from then on in, there's a decent relationship behind that because there's mutual respect. There's a better understanding of each other's roles and the hurdles that get between them and patient care.
That's really great insight because I know a lot of students do have a lot of difficulty, even with mentors and things on road, having the courage and the confidence just to call out on those small things and just prevent it from becoming a big thing is really important because you can go a whole, say, if you're on a 6-week placement or even a 2-week placement, if you don't sort that out, you can actually have a really terrible experience and it might affect your attitude towards the job. And so I think having that courage is really important. And something that I know that I struggled with when I was a first year student to have those types of conversations. So your new book is obviously orientated towards students. How are you going to tailor all of this information regarding attitude and reflection and all of these different types of things towards a student perspective?
It's been really difficult to try and narrow it down. I've had to try and keep the chapters focused, again, picturing myself as a student or picturing myself as an assessor. Try and keep each chapter focused on one area to hone in on and concentrate on that. So the types of content, there's around 20 chapters, I'm not quite sure how many. There's around 20 chapters, but there are things like organizing your office. So about taking care with organizing your ambulance, your equipment, the stuff that you've got in your pockets, just everything having a purpose, knowing where it is, because that's the only thing you can control. And everything else is going to be an unknown from that point onwards. Also talking about professionalism, there's a chapter about professionalism to be proud of, not trying to adopt cool, casual, complacent habits so it looks like we've been here forever, but more taking ownership and being proud of the profession that we're working in so that we can try and instill those habits into students that we precept or mentor in the future. Another chapter about driving, specifically about driving. So in the other book, it's about safety in general, but one about driving and thinking about your patient, about positioning of things, about your perception on the roads from other road users. Things like let A to E be your lifeline. So there are no technical or clinical skills in this book. There are plenty of other resources for that. This is more about narrowing in and fine-tuning one component of each person's approach to the role so that they can grow and build on that for the future.
That's awesome. I'm so keen to read your book when it releases. So your original book, The Good, the Bad, the Ugly Paramedic, you know, your whole mission and your plan and your vision for that book was to grow the good, break the bad, and undo the ugly. Is that the same vision for the student book as well? Or is it a bit more different to like prevent the bad and prevent the ugly from happening?
It's to grow recognition of the bad and the ugly and to actually grow the good. The keep things on a sliding scale, and each book is designed for the reader, so not the profession, not for instructors or preceptors or anybody else to judge the person by, but more for the reader to adopt that sliding scale approach to looking at their own paramedic practice and how they want to behave into the future. I've also released in November a book, a small pocket book called Reflective Rhymes for Patient Care, and that one's for paramedics as well as all other health professionals, and works on the same premise of the sliding scale, and therefore the student paramedic book will follow through with that, about looking at how you can grow as the reader, as how you can grow your good in your paramedic practice, how you can break any bad habits that are beginning to form, and how you can undo any of the ugly habits that you either see or that you anticipate in the future or that you're beginning to adopt, so that you can always bring yourself back up to the good end of the scale. It's never too late.
I am so excited to read this book when it releases. You don't understand how excited. I have both of your books already, and then getting to know that you have a few more on the way, hopefully, as well, that's always a good thing. We're going to wrap this up, and we'd like to ask you three questions that we ask all the people that we interview, and just, you know, get to learn those little those pearls of wisdom at the end of each podcast. So I'd like to start it off, and I'd like to say, what is the greatest mistake that has led to your greatest learning?
My greatest mistake that's led to my greatest learning would have to be failing my driving test the second time around when I moved to Australia. When I passed in the UK, in Scotland, I was 17 and I passed first time. And then I had my bluff on and thought I was the best driver ever. I moved here at 26, failed my driving test four times and couldn't understand why. That is probably the safest aspect of my driving ever since, that the things that I learned on that day, they've made me learn so much, and then teaching my own kids later on, and then also working with student paramedics and driving emergency vehicles, I learned a lot from those four failed driving tests.
That's awesome. My second question is, what is one piece of advice that you would give to yourself in your first year of university as a student?
Yeah, that's probably an easier one to answer for me. The one piece of advice I would give myself is, don't worry about what other people think. As long as I'm connecting with the patient and doing 100% my best, their opinion of me or how I behave doesn't matter.
That's a really nice one, actually. I'll try and take that one on board as well. So the final one is a bit different, might get you thinking a little bit more, is what did you used to believe to be true that you no longer believe to be true?
Oh, in all honesty, I grew up thinking that the world was a terrible place and that people were horrible. I no longer believe that to be true. And gradually throughout my childhood, my teens, my young adult life, and now being an older adult, I don't believe that to be true at all. And the most refreshing aspect of changing that mindset has been being a paramedic. We get to see the good, the bad, and the ugly of each other, but also of the world around us. And as much as that famous question, hey, you must see some terrible things, I always answer those people with, we get to see some amazing things, the lovely things that we see out in the world, the true heroes are the people that drive by and stop and get down and dirty and mixed in with blood and guts and gore when they didn't have to. They're not being paid to, they just wanted to help out. The different things that we see people doing for each other in the world makes me understand what I used to misunderstand, that the world is actually a pretty nice place to be.
That's really sweet. So Tammy, where can we find, is it going to be called The Good, The Bad and The Ugly Student Paramedic?
It's going to be called The Good, The Bad and The Ugly Paramedic Student Handbook. So it filters through from the other book.
Perfect. And so where can students find it when it comes out?
So it will be available by the time this podcast goes live. It will be available at all major retailers online. Also through the web store gbuparamedic.com, and then information about it on all social media platforms is at gbuparamedic.
That's really great. And students that are listening, and graduates even, have a read of The Good, The Bad and The Ugly Paramedic book as well as the student one coming out. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. You can connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or you can email us at studentparamedicpodcast@gmail.com.